You're listening to The Stressless Life with Dr. Yip, a podcast about conquering your fears and overcoming anxiety. Our question for the day is, counting and ordering OCD, when is it wrong to be just right? I am your host, Noah Larracy. Let's say hello to Dr. Yip.
Hello, Noah.
Dr. Yip is a licensed psychologist who's board certified in behavioral and cognitive therapy and an expert in the treatment of anxiety and OCD. So our journey into OCD continues today, and today we're going to talk about counting and ordering OCD. So why don't you tell us about that?
Where do I start? You know, the thing about OCD is that it can look so different depending on what type of cluster of symptoms do you have. So two patients having counting compulsions or two patients having arranging compulsions can look completely different from each other. And the rationale for why one person count versus another person can be completely different as well. So why don't we just start with counting since we're talking about that? So I think the classic example of counting compulsion is when someone is just counting. And counting can be kind of like a criteria. I have to count to a certain number of times, or I have to do this a certain number of times. So for example, a person can be counting 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And this rhythm of counting is what is necessary for this person to feel okay.
So are they counting out loud or are they counting in their head?
It can be both. I would say that most people will count in their heads unless the counting has become so severe that they can no longer contain it within their heads, and now it has to be counted out loud. It could be simply counting, or it can be, I have good and bad numbers. So along with counting, a lot of people have good and bad numbers. This is very close to superstitious OCD. And with superstitious OCD, you know, you have magical numbers, you have good numbers, and you have bad numbers. So what are some common numbers that are good and bad that we have? We have good numbers, the number 7, bad numbers, the number 13. Right? Even if you go to like Las Vegas, a lot of the casinos do not have a 13th floor. So imagine that our superstitions expanded to 1,000. And that's what a person with counting compulsion can feel like. So that person not only has these good and bad numbers, these good and bad numbers are carried to an extreme. So everything has to be done to good numbers, and all bad numbers have to be avoided. So it could be, I have to count to the number 7, or multiples of 7, or any number that's divisible evenly by 7. And any number 13, anything that's related to 13, numbers that are multiples of 13 or divisible by 13 is bad and needs to be avoided. So as you can see, it can get pretty complicated when it comes to counting OCD.
Do these numbers have any particular meaning in these person's lives? Like, does the number 7 their birthday, or do they have 7 brothers and sisters, or do these numbers tend to be slightly, for lack of a better word, arbitrary?
Well, if we are to compare that to society again, why is the number 7 a good number?
Maybe it's the prime number.
Yeah, I don't think. I think you're thinking a little too specific. I don't know that somebody one day came up and said, you know, 7 is a prime number. That's going to be a good number for all of us from now on.
Fair point.
Right? So, and if 7 is a prime number, isn't 13 also a prime number?
That's a good question. Yes, it is. Yes,
however,
it is.
13 is bad, right?
Right.
So again, is there a reason for why someone will choose a number to be good versus bad? Sometimes it could be. Sometimes it could be because something tragic happened or something embarrassing happened on this day, and therefore this day is now a bad day. So for example, we all associate Friday the 13th as a bad day, right? Well, imagine the person with counting OCD, not only would Friday the 13th be a bad day, now over time, any 13th day is a bad day. And then over time, anything 13 is bad. So the year 2013 would have been an entire bad year for a person who has a counting compulsion or of 13 being a bad number.
So is that if they don't use these particular numbers that something bad's going to happen, or is it the actual use of the number feels bad, if that makes sense?
It would usually be either avoiding this number feels safe and I want to gravitate towards using the good numbers because that would promote good things happening, whether it's good luck or, you know, good fortune or whatever that is, good things happening. However, for some people, there may not be a reason. It just feels right to use the number 7. I have no idea why. It just feels right. I just like to count to the number 5. So whenever I do things, as long as I count 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, it just feels natural and it feels right. When I'm not counting, something feels off. Something feels wrong. So it could be there's a reason for this being a good or bad number, or it could be, you know, it just feels right. And that's why I say OCD can be so complex. And just because a person has counting compulsions doesn't necessarily mean, oh, well, this person must have good or bad numbers, or, oh, this person must be counting while they're doing things, or, oh, this person must be avoiding certain numbers and doing things to certain numbers. No. Two people with counting compulsions can exhibit the symptom completely differently.
So it sounds like what you're saying is that there are some patients with OCD that have a need for things to feel just right in a certain way, and they want to avoid any sort of underlying feeling of discomfort or tension that comes with things not being right.
Yes, absolutely. I would say that most patients with OCD has a desire, a need to feel just right. And it's not just isolated to counting or arranging or symmetry or any of the other clusters of OCD. I could be repeating until it feels just right. I can be washing until it feels just right. I can be counting until it feels just right. So I can be ordering and arranging until it feels just right. For some people with OCD, it's not about a specific criteria that has to be met. However, it's a certain feeling that it has to meet. And that feeling can be completely arbitrary. And if you ask the person with OCD, well, how do you know when to stop? They will respond with, I don't know, until it just feels right. Well, how do you know what feels right? I don't know. I just feel it in that moment. So it's this arbitrary feeling of, okay, it feels good enough now. And I'm sure we've all had experiences like that, probably not in the context of OCD. However, we've all had experiences. For example, let's take a person studying. Well, how far do you study till?
Just until you're tired, until the assignment's done, or I guess till you just feel like it's ready to stop.
Exactly, right? Until it feels right. Think I've studied enough and I'm tired. I've studied for quite a while and it feels like it's right. Yeah. So they're relying on that gut feeling.
Okay, so it sounds like OCD then hijacks that gut feeling a little bit or becomes stronger for more people?
It does. OCD definitely hijacks that feeling because that feeling is so arbitrary that now everything has to be done until it feels just right. So not only am I studying until it feels just right, I'm repeating things until it feels just right. I am doing and undoing things until it feels just right. I'm washing my hands until it feels just right. I'm saying this word over and over again until it feels just right. So that feeling will take over pretty much your whole life to try to attain that just right feeling.
So let's talk about specifically with the counters. Let's have some examples of how people count and how this sort of interferes with their daily life.
Well, again, they can be counting, like, for example, to a specific number. I've had a couple of patients where they would just need to count, and it could be 1 to 5, it could be 1 to 10, it could be 1 to 100, and they would just count while they're doing things. And the feeling of counting to this number is what feels right to them. And when they're not counting, it almost feels like it's off in some ways. So as you can imagine, having to count while you're doing everything in your life will take up a lot of time of your life. It'll take up a lot of mental space, a lot of mental energy, right? And it's very interfering. So some people will need to count to all things that they do. Some people might need to count to only certain things. So for example, if I am showering, I would need to count while I'm showering. And this person with OCD might have just counting with showering, or just counting while exercising, or just counting while eating. So it can take on the form of all areas of life, or only with specific tasks that the person deems necessary.
Okay, let's talk about arranging OCD, which is similar to counting OCD. How does that show up in patients?
Well, arranging and ordering, if you can imagine a person who has a very neat home, or a person who is very tidy. However, with ordering and arranging OCD, the person would have specific areas or specific things that need to be arranged or ordered. So for example, this person might need their closets arranged. So from the smallest item to the biggest item, or if you can imagine a bookshelf, from the biggest book to the smallest book, or it can be arranged and ordered in specific categories. We have nonfiction and fiction and science books and art books and history books. You know, so all the categories that you can think of that are imaginable is basically open to a person to choose from who has ordering and arranging. It can also be something as arbitrary as, you know, this bottle of water must face this way, and it must be in this random space in the middle of nowhere. Why? Well, because that just feels right. And here we go again with the just right feeling. There's no rhyme or reason why this bottle of water has to be in that specific spot. However, the person with OCD will require it to be in that space for it to feel right, for it to feel safe.
I can imagine that having to live with someone with this particular type of OCD would be very challenging, wouldn't it?
I would say that it would drive most family members insane when that happens. Because what ends up happening is that not only do you, the person suffering, has to follow this rule, everyone who lives in the family must also follow this rule. And when you're not following this rule that the person suffering from OCD deems absolutely necessary, all hell can break loose. And this can happen with any object. It can happen with the sufferer's own personal belongings, or it can happen with any object in the home. So it can be the remote control. The remote control has to be in this spot. Every time you pick it up and you put it back, it has to go back in that specific spot. And if you put it somewhere else, if you leave it on the couch, the person would not be okay with it and conflict would ensue.
I'm sure a lot of our listeners are probably thinking that they know someone that has this or maybe suspect that they may have it. What's the fine line between someone who's just a neat freak and someone who has ordering and arranging OCD?
Again, it's a preference, right? So with OCD, just like all areas in life, categories, there aren't just two. It's not just you are or you're not. It's a spectrum. It's a continuum. To one extreme is the person where everything must occur according to these rules. To the other extreme, it's no rules exist, right? And most of us are somewhere around the middle. It's yes, we have rules in life. However, they're flexible. And if this rule isn't followed at this moment in time, well, we'll put it back later so that it still follow this rule. For example, let's say the remote control is supposed to be on the table, okay? And let's say it's supposed to be in the docking station on the table. And a person who has ordering arranging OCD, if that remote is not in that specific place every single time it's put back down, then that is a huge no-no. However, a person who doesn't have OCD, let's say a person who's just type A, neat person, might go, all right, well, the remote control isn't back where it is right now, where it should be. However, by the end of the day, it needs to be back there, right? So there's some flexibility to that rule. Again, it's how excessive are these rules applied? The person with OCD has to apply these rituals, these rules, very excessively, very rigidly. Whereas the person where this is just a preference, there's some flexibility there. There's some flexibility involved where it doesn't have to be followed right this moment, every single moment.
Don't some people that have ordering and arranging OCD take pride in these areas that are really, really clean? And don't they sometimes wonder that maybe other people should be as clean as them?
Well, again, one of the criteria for having OCD is that you have to have some level of insight that what you're doing is excessive, especially in adults. You know, children, they might not have the insight. And remember, having OCD is not pleasurable. The person who actually has OCD knows this is excessive, knows this doesn't feel good. It doesn't feel good that I'm spending 8 hours a day trying to make sure that everything is orderly. It takes up too much of my energy and I am exhausted. I am drained. And the person with OCD knows that. So going back to your question, you know, the person with OCD will say, this is excessive and I can't tolerate this anymore, and something needs to change. Now, that doesn't mean that every single person with OCD is willing to do the work to change, right? So people with OCD will say, yes, I see the problem. However, I'm okay with it because I'm not willing to do the work to change. Most people with OCD will see the problem. Now, there are some people who have very, very low insight and who don't see the problem. And it's usually the family members who are pointing out the problem. And for those people, the treatment is going to be much more difficult because their belief system is at a point where it's somewhat delusional that they truly believe that washing their hands 200 times a day to the point where their hands are dry, red, and raw is necessary. So there's a range, and there's not one right way or wrong way about how OCD is supposed to be.
So let's talk about some interventions for counting OCD. Would you have someone stop counting, or do you have them count in a different way? What's the usual tact?
Well, the three rules of thumb is that we want to disobey OCD. So we can either not listen to it because we know it's a prankster, So we don't listen to the OCD monster, or we can do the opposite of what the OCD monster tells us to do. So if the OCD monster tells us we have to count, we purposely don't count, or we do it differently. So if the OCD monster tells us that we have to count to 10, we purposely count to 8, or we count backwards. So as long as you're breaking the ritual, then you're starting to break the OCD rules.
Now, isn't there a fear that by breaking the ritual, you actually could start a new ritual?
There is some people where they start a new ritual by breaking rituals. So the rule of thumb for that is you never break the ritual in the same way twice. So if you count it to the number 8 this time, the next time, just count to the number 3, or count backwards, or count by even numbers, or count by odd numbers, so that every time you're counting, you're doing it differently.
What about for arranging OCD? Let's use your example of the person with the bookshelf and the book collection. What kind of intervention would you use for them if they had a very rigid system of ordering their books?
Well, it's messing that order up. You know, again, the 3 rules of thumb is to either disobey OCD or do the opposite of what OCD tells you to do, or you break the rules by doing it differently, right? So if OCD, the OCD monster is telling you, you have to arrange the books from biggest to smallest, well, maybe you do the biggest to smallest the other way around, right? From smallest to biggest. Or you break up that rule even further by doing one big book, one small book, one big book, one small book. If it has to be categorized a certain way, then perhaps half of it is categorized and the other half is spread amongst the other categories. So whatever you can do, even if you start little by little, the goal is to disobey OCD and to start breaking those OCD rules.
And how do patients react at first when their arrangements are disrupted?
Yeah, it's all hell breaking loose, right? Because if you spent so many of your years preserving these rules, because these rules are what's comfortable to you and what's familiar to you, and all of a sudden you're having to disrupt all of this, then yes, it feels like chaos in your life. However, part of living freely is not needing those rules and being okay with some chaos, because chaos is reality. Your life isn't always going to be orderly and arranged and smooth, and chaos is a realistic part of life. So part of the journey is learning that some chaos is okay. And as long as you learn to tolerate it, then you learn to deal with the chaos itself.
Well, I'm ready to get chaotic myself. Thank you, Dr. Yip.
Thank you, Noah.
Thank you for listening to the Stressless Life Podcast. You can join the discussion and find more information at thestresslesslifepodcast.com. Please write to us with questions and comments at podcast@thestresslesslife.com. Until next time, stay stressless.